This episode of The North Remembers is brought to you by Minute with Mary. So, guys, we've got some big things coming along. You may or may not know, but I love mascara. It's what first got me into working with makeup and cosmetics. And I have a brand new mascara that's coming out on May 1st. The birthday month for me. What is it? Your name day. It's like my name day, but my name month. I celebrate the whole month long. And if you like mascara, head on over to MinuteWithMary.com, scroll down, and you're going to see what I'm talking about. And because you're a The North Remembers
listener
fan, we're going to be having something extra special for you. Because I'm on Facebook Live, I'm not allowed to say it. But message me, because I've got something super, super special for you when you make a purchase from MinuteWithMary.com.
I wish Father were here.
I would love to see the look on his face when he realizes his two sons are about to die defending Winterfell.
That would be something to see.
I remember the first time we were here. First time I saw this hall.
You were a golden lion. I was a drunken whoremonger.
It was all so simple. It wasn't so simple. I was sleeping with my sister, and you had one friend in the world who was sleeping with his sister.
I was speaking in relative terms.
Do you miss it?
Of course I miss it.
Well, my golden lion days are done, but whoremongering is still an option for you.
It's not. Things would be easier if it were. The perils of self-betterment.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The North Remembers. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Game of Thrones on HBO. So sit back and relax, because winter is here. How's it going? My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and you know, I could get in my Game of Thrones footy pajamas and just watch that fire scene for 24 hours straight and never feel bad about it.
Amen.
Like,
amen.
You know how sometimes when you watch too much Netflix and you're like, oh God, I gotta go to the gym. Oh, I should not have eaten that whole thing of chocolate popcorn. No, I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. I really wouldn't care.
No.
That whole scene is one of my favorite scenes of television I've ever seen.
I agree.
I've ever watched. It was incredible.
I agree. I totally agree. You know, one of our friends, actually, Tim, texted us today and he said, we are going to look back on our rewatches of Game of Thrones and watch that scene with such fondness, because we all know that some of those people are going to perish next week, or at least in the weeks ahead. And to know that this was like their last moment of joy before the dead. We're knocking at the gates of Winterfell because we saw them.
Just a good shout out to our good friend Tim, who's listening to this right now on his commute to work into Boston. So you're welcome, good friend.
Yes.
You are welcome.
Oh, we want to first take a moment before we get into this episode to remind you that we would love for you to subscribe to this podcast. Maybe you heard about it from a friend. Maybe someone shared it with you. But you could head on over to your podcast app of choice, search The North Remembers, and you could find us there. And you could hit that subscribe button. And that way, every single episode for the following 4 weeks. How are there only four left, guys? I'm crying inside.
Oh, my God.
Seriously. Four episodes. It'll be sent right to your mobile device. And you can also connect with Blake and I by finding Mary and Blake on any social media, by going to maryandblake.com or by finding us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the places.
All right, Marvin, you
not
ready to
Instagram.
Get Instagram? Well, not Instagram.
I fibbed.
We're on YouTube.
Yeah,
and Twitter and Facebook. But really, if you really want to, you can even email us at maryandblake@gmail.com. That's all I got.
Perfect.
That's
all right.
I got.
So let's get into this episode.
Let's do it.
All right, Blake, break it on down. Give me the facts.
Well, it was entitled A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is in reference to what Jaime did for Sir Brienne of Tarth by making her a knight, which, by the way, I sobbed sobbed during this scene. Mary's like, are you crying?
No, I didn't say it in a mocking way.
No, you didn't. You didn't. I will give you credit. But yeah, it's named after what Jaime did for Brienne and calling her and making her a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. The director was David Nutter, who directed the season premiere for season 8. Just to go back over it again, his many episodes include The Old Gods and the New, A Man Without Honor, The Reigns of Castamere, Misa, The Dance of Dragons, Mother's Mercy, and obviously, as I just said, Winterfell. Mm-hmm. The writer was Brian Cogman, who has quickly become one of my favorite writers in the business. He is spectacular, one of the main producers on the show. His many credits include Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things, What is Dead May Never Die, Mary, one of your favorites, Kissed by Fire, Oath Keeper, another good one, The Laws of Gods and Men, Kill the Boy, Unbowed, Unbent, and Unbroken, Blood of My Blood, The Broken Man, and Stormborn. He actually also has a Game of Thrones spinoff in the works right now. There's actually multiple Game of Thrones spinoffs in the works at HBO. One has already actually been approved, being written by Jane Goldman.
Okay.
Who was a writer actually on the film. Oh, goodness gracious. The Kingsman.
Oh, okay. Yes.
But yeah, his is also in the works too. And the one with Jane Goldman is actually going to be starring Naomi Watts, and it's supposed to be taking place well, like thousands and thousands of years before this.
Oh, wow.
Game of Thrones happening right now, which is actually kind of cool. Mary, your dragon rating, what do you got?
My dragon rating for this episode was another 5. You know, I'm doubting that many, if any, episodes in this final season will be getting anything less than a 5. Mm-hmm. They have done an extraordinary job, because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I had lower hopes, lower expectations for this week's episode. I just thought it was going to be a whole bunch of awkward, that they could have renamed this episode Awkward, because really that's how the trailer made it feel. And you knew all these people were going to be coming together. You knew you were just waiting for the Night King and the White Walkers to approach. I had no idea I was going to have hashtag all the feels. I mean, all of the feels. Yes, awkward was one of them. Thanks, Danny. but honestly, I was blown away by this episode. I think I can only go up from here, and I'll be having some 5 pluses in the very near future. How about you?
On the same exact boat, as a matter of fact, I'm going to declare this the first... It's the first horse of the season. Mm-hmm. Absolutely the first horse of the season. Dare I say... See, I matched that lip pitch. You see
you
that?
You did. I'm proud of you.
I loved this episode. It's not a 5+ for me.
Okay.
Because of a couple of dinky-doink things that, you know, I think have to be addressed. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's partly not the episode's fault. It's just simply a manifestation of what the episode is and where it is.
Yes.
But I loved this episode.
Totally.
I'm all in. Like I said, give me my Game of Thrones footy pajamas.
If they made them in your size.
I'd find them.
Giants.
I would take like 3 little kid ones and then make them mine. Just so I could.
Perfect.
So, because I'm basically as big as Tormund Giantsman. But I'm all in. I love this episode. What do you got for your GBG?
Okay, so my good, my bad, and my great for this episode. My good was actually the Sansa Daenerys talk. I thought that it was done exceedingly well. I loved how they were able to break down the walls over their mutual love for Jon. How Sansa, dang, Sansa has like, she's on a new level. Ever since last season. And I am loving me some Sansa Stark. And, you know, it really, Dany has not been painted in a nice picture the past two episodes.
Mm.
It was very awkward, as I expected things to be in this episode, but I enjoyed it a lot. I liked being a fly on the wall for that scene.
Sure.
My bad for this episode was, Tormund's giant milk story. Because he has brought so much amazing humor. I mean, even in the fact when he runs in when Jon Snow is about to hug Ed, and all of a sudden, like, the music gets so nice, and it's like, oh, friends reunited, they're not dead. And then in he comes, hugs.
Loved it.
You know, he's brought so much comedic moments. You know, is the big woman here? You know, like, just all of his... you know, wanting of Brienne has been absolutely humorous. And we've been able to have that awkward moment between him, Brienne, and then Jaime while they're beside the fire. But that story just went on for a little long. And then he drank what appeared to be milk out of that thing, out of that horn. Like. And I'm like, gosh, 3 months sucking at a giant's bosom. I didn't need that visualization before I went to bed. So that was my bad.
In real life, by the way, it was milk what he was chugging. It really was milk.
That is not healthy to drink that much milk. No. I mean, as someone who's lactose intolerant, I definitely would not drink that much milk. But like a person, a human, it's like not allowed in your body to drink a gallon of milk in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a thing that people did in college to like see if they could do the milk challenge.
Oh, it's like the cinnamon challenge?
Yeah, except you get really sick. Or if you're able to keep it all inside, you like body goes into toxic shock because we're not supposed to be drinking cow's milk. It's as weird as drinking giant's milk. Once again, I'm lactose intolerant, so I'm able to say this, but I love cheese. Okay, and then my great was Brienne being knighted by Jaime.
Absolutely. Like, just time out.
Yes.
All the Charmin.
Yes. All the Charmin.
I just, that's a saying we have from our show on This Is Us, too. Yes. All the Charmin.
Meaning we're too cheap to buy Kleenex.
Right.
So we use toilet paper for tissues.
Might as well.
It's cheaper.
It's there's no sense in having two different things. It's ridiculous. Okay, for me, the good was the scene with John and Dolores Ed and Sam on top of the wall right before the fire scene. It's just great seeing all of the brothers back together.
The three musketeers that are left, you mean?
Yeah, right.
But that like induction class.
Right, but mm-hmm. like it's just great to see them back in the cold, on the wall, mm-hmm. all together, and then just recognizing that and just being like, wow, this is amazing. But we also have this great conversation about how they're all effed if Sam is the last person that they're going to rely on. And there's this fantastic moment when Sam says, well, effed isn't the word I would describe you with. And there's just this moment like in the background that's kind of out of focus where you see Kit Harington as Jon Snow just laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you see quite often, right?
Yes.
But it was this warm and beautiful moment between three men who just are seeing the humor in their lives right before they're all going to die.
Well, and like these guys knew John when he was like a normal human. Okay, you said the word human because John's been a little weird ever since Melisandre brought him back.
Yes.
Okay. Like, yeah, he loves Daenerys and he's hot and he's cool, but like, he's not the same Jon Snow. Just like, in a different level, that Bran is no longer Brandon Stark. I mean,
right.
When you have some magical things happen to you, you get a little weird, man. And this was a moment when it was like the innocence of Jon Snow when he was purely Jon Snow, not brought back to life Jon Snow,
right.
Came back.
Well, he doesn't have the burden of being part of the Night's Watch. He doesn't have the burden of being the Lord Commander. He's just a guy with his
yes.
three buddies that are together.
Just
a
dude.
And he that laugh, like that. There's a lot of those moments in mm-hmm. here, too. Like Sir Davos laughing, Jaime laughing, like we played at the beginning. Just a lot of great moments, but that one really stood out to me. The bad, and this is nerdy, but I'm not sold.
Hold on. We're podcasting about Game of Thrones, my love.
Time out.
This is nerdy. Do you see where we
touché,
are?
Touche. Our entire studio is we're one giant nerd fest.
Yes.
Okay. That being said, I'm just not sold on the motivation of the Night King, at least from what they described here.
Okay.
He just wants there could be complete darkness. He just wants to erase humanity.
I mean, that's what Bran is saying.
That's what I'm saying, right? So that, for me, is a bunch of crap. Because like, if you remember Thor, The Dark World, Christopher Eccleston played the villain in that film. And he was a dark elf. His name was Malekith. And it was like...
What color was he?
He was like kind of like a grayish green... I forget.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
That universe has gotten too big for
its anyway,
britches.
His motivation for that film was, I just want there to be complete darkness. And it's like, okay, what the hell is that? That's just thin as friggin' paper. And it just doesn't make sense. Now, like, there's a difference, I think, and this is a great conversation we should have. There's a difference between having real motivation and there just being, like, a figure, a force, like Michael Myers. Michael Myers doesn't have motivation, right, in the Halloween films. He just does stuff because
yeah.
he murders people. And you could at least make that argument for the Night King, but the fact that they tried to explain it away, he wants to erase humanity, that to me is just weak, and I don't buy it. And it reminds me of Malekith in Thor: The Dark World. But having said that, this is just Bran's interpretation of what the Night King Correct. Wants. And I don't know if we're ever going to get a real motivation for the Night King, but the fact is it's just from his perspective. So okay. I feel like it's lacking, and I feel like there's more to come.
I would agree.
So I
is
can't,
it what's your great?
I can't go full bad, but it's bad.
Okay.
The great for me, obviously, it's the knighting ceremony and the whole fireside chats, all of it. There's this one fantastic scene with all of them in a horseshoe
yes.
right in the middle. And they were small. Oh. They felt small. They felt little in this huge epic story. It's just...
Is there anyone else you would have liked at that fire? Who was at Winterfell?
What do you mean?
Like, do you feel like anyone was missing that you're like, oh, I would have liked them to sit at that fire?
No, because I think they were all... The funny thing is, and I'll get into this too, is I think that the people that were there at the fire mm-hmm. are kind of the heart of the story.
There were no Starks.
Right.
No.
Right, but the Starks are... on a different level, meaning like they're the main protagonists who push the story forward. But the heart of the story, the real relationships that we truly appreciate, like Jon has a relationship with Dany. We're not sold on that yet. Sansa has a relationship with Dany and her brothers, but also we're not sold on that quite yet. But the people that were at that fire were the ones who we've been through so much with and are all together. And they're there for some particular reason outside of their control. And because of that, it felt honest. It felt like all of these were like the misfits gathering around the fire, being like, holy crap, we are here. And because of that, that was the real heart of what I think they were trying to get at.
I saw it as like, these are the people who don't fear death at all. You know, like these are the knights. These are the ones who they have... given up everything, including their homes, because the Starks are still home and they have to take care of all those like crabby northerners. You know, they have a lot that they have to be nervous about. These people don't have any family. They've got nothing going for them. So it's kind of like YOLO.
Yes.
Then let's joke. I mean,
I don't think the Hound is afraid of death. I don't think
Jon
Snow is afraid of death. No, I'm not kidding.
I think the Hound is totally afraid of death. I've seen him with fire.
No, he's afraid of fire. He's not afraid of death.
I don't know. Okay, so that was your great.
Yes, that's my great.
Should we dive? Should we dive in?
Let's absolutely dive. What do you got first? Like, what's the thing that stands out to you where you're like, okay, this is it. This is it. What do you got?
Well, I think we need to deal with the obvious. John telling Daenerys, guess what? I'm your nephew.
Yes. How did you feel about the timing of this situation? Did it land for you or was it a thud?
It landed for me because the entire episode, John was not into Dany. Like even in the courtroom when Jamie's there and you could tell John has so much going on in his mind right now. And he's like, and now I need to deal with this. And he right away stands with Sansa. Like, it's not even like, what do you think, my queen? He doesn't ask his lover her opinion. He doesn't ask his queen her opinion because he's still upset with her that she burned Samwell's brother. And he's trying to figure out, oh my gosh, I might actually have to tell her the truth. So I loved how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, I think that they've been doing a really interesting change of how they're painting our perception of Daenerys, because John obviously is kind of skeeved out that he's been yeah. having sex with his aunt. Like, everyone wanted to have sex last night that wanted sex. Okay. And Brienne and Jamie, like, that's pretty much the knight's equivalent of sex, is like, I have knighted you. Thank you.
Right.
So everyone did what they wanted to do. And if John and Dany, if John was down, he would have been doing Dany, but instead he's been obviously grossed out because Starks don't really do incest. I thought it was interesting how Dany was like, that wasn't what she was concerned about. It wasn't that the man that I love, my lover, because she's said I love him.
Yes.
John has not come out at all. He has not said I love you. He has not said to Sansa, I love her. I mean, we obviously know he does, and Sansa says he loves you, but Jon hasn't said it yet. But Dany, who has vocalized the L word, rather than say, oh my gosh, you're my nephew and we've been having sex, or oh my gosh, I'm in love with you, and like, I don't really know how I feel about this, because she's a Targaryen, they're down with incest.
Yeah.
And Dany's one motive her entire life has been to get on the throne. So rather than the love of my current life, my current love is my nephew, rather than that be what strikes her, it becomes this defensive, you believe your brother and your best friend. This means that...
And she was worried about her claim.
Yes.
That's the issue.
Yes.
And like, I kind of get where Dany is coming from, being like, listen, this is your best friend and your brother saying all this stuff. Now, I'm not saying that they're liars.
Yeah.
I'm not calling them a liar. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go that far. But are you sure you want to go with this? Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Because I get it. It makes sense to me. What does not make sense to me is her immediate reaction of being like, well, your claim to the throne is now more legitimate than mine. I mean... On a base level, I think it does make sense because that has been her concern this entire time.
I mean, she walked into those crypts horny as Hades, you know, coming on in, strutting like it's our last day.
Horny as Hades?
I don't know.
What the hell?
I don't know. Well, I didn't want to say hell, but there we go.
Oh, my God. another thing that I've heard, too, is like, oh, why would Jon say it right at this moment? Well, you know, I kind of get it, too. I kind of get why he would do it at that moment, because they're going into battle. They are fighting for their lives. And if could you imagine if they survive and then all of a sudden he tells her that and like waits and just tells her at the right. Don't you think she'd be like, why didn't you say something to begin with? Don't you think that would happen?
I mean, I feel like it was weighing on John's mind this entire time. He also had to tell her, this is why I don't want to have sex with you on our last night.
Yeah.
And I don't know. John's such an honorable man. John always says the truth.
Right. And I think it plays into the theme of the episode, which I do want to get into, which is just remembering where you started and how far you've come. And having that special moment of him looking at the statue of Lyanna and saying, that's my mother. Holy crap. And remember, it's Dany that's the one that's coming down to be like, hey, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, you have to say something.
I know.
I'm here. I'm emotional. Like, this is a big effing deal.
And this is the person that Jon loves, supposedly. Like, it's the person he could tell
right.
his honest truth.
Like, you should be able to tell your spouse the truth at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not there's a good reaction is a different story, but you should be able to tell your spouse or the person that you love X, Y, and Z, this is the truth, and you need to know. That's my opinion on the whole situation. I don't think that there's a bad time to say it, because it does mean a lot to both of them. It doesn't mean a lot. It dramatically shifts the entire narrative for both characters as soon as those words are said. And you have to say it.
Who do you think is going to be next on this knowledge list? Who finds out next? Does Daenerys tell someone? Does Daenerys tell Ser Jorah?
Oh,
does she tell
question.
Anybody? Or she's like, mom's the word, because maybe Jon Snow will die in
Gotta
battle.
Be Tyrion. Gotta be Tyrion.
Maybe Bran already told Tyrion during their fireside chat.
That's possible.
I loved that Tyrion was like, listen, man, you're kind of awkward. Let's have some, I'm going to pull up some wine. I'm going to do what everyone wishes they could do. I'm just going to ask you, what do you know?
what are you thinking?
And I liked how we asked Bran, like, do you need some help? He was the first person this season to ask Bran if he would like to be pushed somewhere. Once again, nobody's helping Bran out.
Well, while we got Dany on the brain, let's talk about she and Sansa.
Oh, yes.
How are you feeling about this conversation and the relationship that they're starting to form?
I think it's a very accurate portrayal.
In what way?
In the way that sometimes two very strong-willed women, one who is a sister and one who loves the sister's brother, can sometimes butt heads. And I just think that Sansa, rightly so, has been able to tell Jon and has now been able to tell Daenerys, listen, I don't know if I trust you or your reasonings, because frequently men do stupid things for love.
Absolutely. And she's right.
Yes. And I loved that Sansa did that. And I really loved at the end, of course, after this is all done, what happens to the North. I was not expecting that. I was expecting that High School Musical, we're all in this together. I didn't know that Sansa was going to say, oh, and by the way, we're still not taking the knee to you. I see what you're saying.
Like,
we want to be our own country.
Well, it sets up a great narrative force for after the Battle of Winterfell. What if this all mm-hmm. goes down, we win, and great, what are we doing? And I'm okay with Sansa bringing it up because she is in charge of the North. She is the one who has to run it.
Yes.
Not Daenerys, her. And I get that she's been through a lot. And both of them have. And it's great that they both, I remember thinking, okay, I remember saying to you, let's get this all out of the way now. When Daenerys walks up and sees Sansa, you know, getting pushed by Ser Jorah, I was like, all right, let's get this all out of the way now. Let's get it done. Let's finish it and move on so we can go into the battle and have everything fine. But it does provide a good narrative force for after it, because not everything is hunky-dory.
No.
Just because, you know, they're all together here doesn't mean that it's all going to work.
No.
And I think it's, again, it's Sansa bringing up the practical part.
God, I love Sansa.
I never thought I would say that.
Had you asked me in earlier seasons.
Oh, in season one.
Who do you think is going to be one of your favorite characters?
It. Oh, I hate you. I hate her. Like, shut up, Sansa. But again, it shows you how far she's come.
Yes, I agree.
Is it me, or are they making Daenerys, are they setting her up to be unlikable?
Oh, in my opinion, yes. These two episodes, if a new viewer sat down and was given a very brief synopsis of the previous few seasons and then started to watch this show, I highly doubt they'd be like, wow, Daenerys totally is amazing and deserves to be in the Iron Throne. She would be a great ruler. No. No, that is not what someone would say. So they either, they meaning the writers, have either done a really crappy job, if that's what they weren't intending, or if this is their intent to have us as viewers, to have the entire North, Sam, Sansa, everybody, to have everybody questioning, is Daenerys the right choice? So that slowly as the trickle effect happens of the truth bomb coming out, people will also have to decide, and Jon will have to decide, do I want to take the throne? Because Jon's already come out many times and said he doesn't want it. So I love it. I think this was all done on purpose. I think we needed 7 seasons of loving Daenerys and seeing her grow. But on the flip side, now seeing Sansa, who I think is stronger in many ways than Daenerys, because Daenerys has lucked out having dragons. Okay? Daenerys has been lucky so many times. She's worked really hard.
Yes and no.
But the fact that she has dragons is why she's here today. Okay? She would be a nobody, a Dothraki widow, stuck in some hut with all the other Dothraki widows if it weren't for the dragons.
Well, I disagree with that.
Because
she's the one who forced her way out by burning everybody down. And she just didn't get burned in the hut.
Okay, so maybe if she still had the fire ability, she'd just be walking around in the sand. But what I'm saying is that I still love Daenerys. But Daenerys has had some really good fortune, whereas Sansa has never had good fortune. And it has made Sansa so stinking smart.
Yes.
And so protective that Sansa is like a wall. You know? Sansa really is. She has been so unlucky. She's been the foil pretty much to Dany. She started up pretty much being a queen, and now
right.
Look at everything she's been.
I agree. I wonder if they're writing Daenerys this way. I think you're 100% on track by saying they're going to force everybody, once the truth comes out, to make a choice between Jon or Dany. But I also think, I wonder if they're writing this way so that they can set Dany up, not for redemption, but to have her make a choice mm-hmm. where either something goes really right and you say, okay, I get it, or something goes really wrong, and I have a great three-eyed raven time about this, something goes really wrong,
yeah,
and you're like, okay, I'm off the train.
Because she could be totally mean right now and go talk to Grey Worm and everybody and say, okay, we're going to run south, you know? I'm not down with this. Let's go fight Cersei, you know? I mean, obviously she can't because the dead are here.
So a lot of people I've read have said, well, a lot of people said they didn't like the episode because there was no action. There was nothing that...
Oh, there was action.
Yeah, I know. There was nothing that was major that happened.
Hello, Arya's cherry got popped. That's a pretty big deal in someone's life.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Who are these people? I'm sorry, but if you don't think it is momentous for someone to have their first sexual experience, and she owned it, man. You could take off your own pants.
Yeah, she had no qualms. The strong kind of woman that she is.
See, this is why, once again, this episode could have been called awkward.
my semi-bad was watching Maisie Williams undress.
I think that was everybody's semi-bad, because we're like, wait, is she still 12? No.
Yeah.
She's 18 in the show. No,
yeah, and she's 22 in real life.
Yeah.
But we have been watching this girl since she was 12 years old.
Yeah.
It's a little funky.
But this is how parents must feel. Like, I was thinking about this. This is how my mom and dad must feel, knowing that we've had kids.
Absolutely.
Like, they're like, we love our daughter so much.
But
she had kids.
Sex.
That means she had sex.
Awkward. With that guy.
So, I love it. I love it. Way to be.
Yeah, she owned it. And I think as viewers, we should all kind of just get over it and be fine. But I was kind of like, I had my hands over my eyes, peeking through my fingers as I was watching it. Like, I feel like I'm going to go to jail for watching this.
However, I don't know how pleased she was with Gendry's performance. Or, you know what? It was a very accurate depiction of a young woman's first sexual experience. I'll tell you that. Arya was like, that's it.
And I will give you that Gendry's depiction of a man's first performance is...
It was his fourth performance.
Well, but you know what I mean. It's a pretty accurate depiction of a man.
She just kind of sat there. I wasn't expecting her to be a cuddler, but
no,
I was expecting to have a little smirk. Instead, as I said, generally not the most like fabulous thing always for a woman. But B, she probably was like, all right, that's done. And now I'm going to die. Like, she probably, it took her mind off of the fact that they were about to go to war for maybe 5 minutes.
how about 45 seconds?
Okay. And then that was it. So
you know that Arya is not a cuddler. She's the kind of person that calls the Uber for you. Like Jersey Shore. She's like
the situation. Like Gendry's like putting on his briefs and she's like, your horse is outside.
I got the cab for you.
Yeah.
So you might as well just, because I got things to do.
I got to go sharpen that new weapon.
I got to go to the gym, do tan, do some laundry, you know, and then figure it out. So yeah, she's not a cuddler.
No.
But again, getting back to why I think people were upset with this episode, and I kind of get why some people are, because it's a bottle episode. That's all it is. It's like, it's when you get all your characters. Remember,
I think that this episode was so significant.
Well, let me expand on it.
Being the devil's advocate.
I do you remember the episode in This Is Us when they were in the waiting room? It was called The Waiting Room.
Yes.
And it was just all the characters in the waiting room waiting for Kate and little Jack. Spoiler alert. That's what this episode was. Now, they all weren't all together in this one little room, but for what Game of Thrones is, this is as much of a bottle episode as they're ever going to have. Meaning, not a ton happens. A lot of it is based in the relationships of what they're trying to establish going forward. They're getting the story right. They're getting things going forward. And they're telling you, here we are. This is what we're doing. This is what we did. And we're clearing the decks to move forward. And it again, when we talked about it on This Is Us 2, I mentioned it like the fly episode in Breaking Bad. Same exact thing. They just chased the friggin' fly around for an entire 60 minutes.
Okay.
But I think that's why this episode is so beautiful. Because Game of Thrones, in my opinion, from here on in, is going to be, like our good buddy Tim said, it's going to be banana land. And we're going to look back and be like, wow, thank God we had all of this time together with all of these people.
Some just, joyous moments.
Just to have the humanity, to have to have the deep breath before the great exhale of the Battle of Winterfell and all of the fallout that is to come as a result of the Battle of Winterfell. You know, a lot of these people are going to die. They have too many characters and not enough story. It's a math problem.
Let's just do it then. Whose story is done and who is worthy of dying?
You want to do this right now?
I want to do it right now. Let's just rip off this Band-Aid.
Jorah is out. Jorah filled his purpose of getting Dany to think about Tyrion again and to fix things with Sansa. Jorah's out.
But Jorah now has... He has Valyrian steel.
Yes, but that doesn't mean anything. He's out.
Means he can kill him.
Yeah, but he's out. He's going to die. Tyrion's in. I think the whole purpose of what we saw and how he has been looking at things in terms of remembering them, he's in. I think Jaime's in. I think Brienne's out, especially because she was just knighted.
I think Podrick's out.
Podrick's probably out. I think the only, let's put it this way, the only safe characters, in my opinion.
Yeah, let's go for safe. Let's see who can't die.
All right.
The Starks, all of them.
Jon's not going to die. Sansa's not going to die. Arya's not going to die.
Bran?
Bran's going to die, in my opinion.
He's going to die next week?
He's going to fulfill his purpose. And I'm going to, that's okay. Part of my three-eyed raven time. He's going to die.
I don't think any of the Starks are going to die this week.
Let's see. Tyrion's going to live.
I think Theon's going to die.
Theon's definitely going to die.
Poor Theon.
And I think Jaime will live. And I think that's about it. I think Missandei's going to die. I think...
She better hurry back.
I think Grey Worm's going to die.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were talking about who's going to live.
Yeah, you're right. No, but so, okay, who's going to live? Jon?
I think all the Starks, but okay, you have your Bran as...
Dany will live.
I think the Lannisters are going to live.
Tyrion will live and Jaime will live.
And I think Dany will live.
And I think that's it. I think that's the only people that have enough plot armor to stay alive. All of the rest of them are going to die. Davos dead.
Sam. I want Sam to stay alive. I'm a little nervous, but I think Sam needs to stay alive to document time. But that shot of the Three Musketeers up on the wall when they were saying like, oh, and we'll see who's still alive. Only Sam. Only Jon was in focus. I got a scary little moment at that point.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay, so I think Sam will be alive. I think Grey Worm's dead. I don't really think anyone but the Lannisters of our fireside chat will be alive.
I think that's who is going to live. And I kind of like what you said about Sam, about having the responsibility of cataloging their lives.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like almost like a there and back again type thing.
Where George R. R. Martin like wants to be.
Yeah. He lusts J.R.R. Tolkien, after Tolkien. So I wonder if Sam is the one that's telling the story of A Song of Ice and Fire.
I would believe that.
I would believe that too. I think that would be a cool thing. Like when he's like wicked old and you see him writing it like there and back again. I think that'd be really cool. But I think just having all of these people together is what gives value to this episode. And again, we've always talked about character. I said this last episode. Character, 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 character. Yes, great, sure. But what is the value of these characters? It's the relationships that they've created and how far those relationships have come and how much they've evolved. That is the important part of seeing them all together.
Okay.
And it's said right here, right in the beginning. It's why I played it at the beginning. When Tyrion says, you know, to Jaime, the perils of self-betterment, you know, or something like that. All these people got together who've all fought the Starks at one point, and here they are in their hearth waiting to defend their castle. It's tremendous.
It is.
It's absolutely tremendous. And that's, I think, what plays into the theme of where we are and where we've come from and how we've began. Would you find that...
I loved it. I mean, even one of my runners-up for the GBG would have been Jaime going and speaking with Bran, and just saying like, I'm sorry. And you just realize exactly like you said, like from where you once began, when Bran brought up that the things we do for love, from where we started season one, episode one, to where we are now, to see the evolvement of these people and the relationships. It's just such a big deal.
And I think the real benefit of having this episode and the reason why it works so well, the structure of it, it starts off with Jamie. Oh, by the way, that opening scene of just diving right in to the fray with Jamie in the court scene and everything. Fantastic stuff, because it automatically brings up Brienne talking about how she saved, how he saved her from being raped and doing the right thing and calling it even between the two, essentially. Like, he saved her a number of times. Now she has saved him. I never thought that Dany was going to take Jamie out. I never thought that for one second, because there were too many people there that knew too much about Jamie to have him saved. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And having said that, starting with Jamie and then ending with Tyrion, you can see the spine of the episode, which is the two brothers, who they are, what they've done, and how the people around them have either risen up or fallen, or how they've affected each of the characters that are around them. Would you agree with this?
Yes. I'm just starting to get nervous.
Why?
I don't know. We just talked about how, like, nobody really has a point to live. I mean, they have points to live, but plot points.
Well, yeah. I'm kind of take-cornered on this, because I said that Tyrion was going to be the one that kills Cersei, and it's not going to be Jaime. The one thing that I could say would be that Jaime sacrifices himself to save Brienne.
Oh my gosh.
I'm kind of on board with that.
Oh, where's Bronn?
Bronn's on his way.
Yeah, how long does it take? It takes weeks. Remember how long it took for Jaime to get there?
Yeah, but the whole time thing right now is out the picture, is out the window.
All right.
Because you just kind of you have to accept
that. Is Bronn going to show up at the Battle of Winterfell?
No.
Why not? That'd be so cool. It'd be really helpful to have another good night.
Maybe you're right.
And then he's going to be like, I can't kill these dudes. This is crazy. What do you think?
Maybe you're right.
Right? I don't know. You know what I think? I think he took a boat to Dorne. He took all that money and said, I'm done.
I'm going to go drink some wine.
Seriously. What are these people doing? Okay. So let's shift gears.
Okay.
We see Ser Davos talking to that little scarred girl.
Oh, which way do you want to go? And it reminds him of
Shireen, who he just adored so much. Oh. And she's talking about how she wants to fight, and he convinces her to go down to the crypts to go protect everyone down there, because Gilly, who wants to be down the crypts as well. Good job, Gilly and Davos, for taking care of that business. Something's up with that girl.
Gilly lives, by the way. I think Sam lives.
Here's the thing, though.
I think Varys lives too, by the way.
They're making too big of a deal of saying, everybody, if you want to be safe,
go to the crypts.
Yeah. Except crypts are where all the dead people live. Okay, you're putting all of these really bad fighters, or just like people who don't have any skills when it comes to combat, down with the dead bodies of all of the Starks. And you're going to be having the White Walkers come. The White Walkers, of course, raise dead people.
Yeah, but
so you're going to have a crypt people.
But I think the logic on that is questionable at best, because I don't know if the people that have to be killed by the whites are the ones that are reanimated.
Oh.
Like, if somebody just dies by themselves, can they be reanimated if the whites or the White Walkers are among them? And my gut tells me no.
Okay.
My gut tells me no, because I think there's a certain magic to the White Walkers, and in response to that, also there's a magic to the whites, because they were created by the White Walkers. So anybody that's killed by the whites or the White Walkers.
But if you just die from choking, you don't think you could be resurrected as a White Walker?
My gut tells me no.
The white. Too many different names.
It's way too many names. My gut tells me no. But I could be wrong.
I think that they're going to... Rickon's coming at you.
But we have... and Dead Ned.
Dead Ned.
With his head. but we have the foresight from the trailer of knowing that there's going to be an issue in
the Crips
because of
Arya running away.
Arya. So I don't know. My gut also tells me that that Winterfell gets breached, and that's who's in the Crips.
Oh, you think the Whites are in the Crips?
Yeah.
It's not. Okay. All right. Okay. Can we talk about Bran's really bad idea to just stick him under the tree with his only defense being Theon Greyjoy, who hasn't fought?
Well, he's got dragons too. The dragons will be flying close, but not too close to scare off the Night King.
Yeah, but that doesn't really mean that Bran's protected. I mean, let's be real. The Night King can throw a spear or could do some weird thing and kill Bran very quickly.
You know, he's an Olympic javelin thrower from the previous season.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that like he can easily throw a spear. If the dragons are flying away a little too far, I don't know. And Theon, like, I appreciate it, Theon. It's a very nice gesture. But if I were to have a protector, I would have picked Arya.
Tormund?
Someone?
anyone other than Theon.
Seriously.
But it was nice. It was nice seeing Theon.
I mean, at least Sam's killed a white. I would have had Sam. I would have had anyone but Theon.
Yep, that's true.
But I appreciate it. I just am saying, like, okay, he's bait.
The journey that he's gone through
to get
to where he was, like, you could say, well, he's back to being one of the Starks. The problem, though, is that in my opinion, he never felt like a Stark. He felt like a prisoner. He played the role of being a Stark brother until he had the fortune of going to, you know, his dad, Baelor, and being like, I can do this. I can prove to you that, you know, I'm a Greyjoy. But now he's renounced all of that. And he truly feels like, I'm one of you. Let me do that. And going from being
Reek. But he, like, knows
it's
a death.
Yeah, he probably knows that death is certain. And that's why I think Theon's out, because his story's over. His redemption is here. Save Bran.
Okay.
You're being trusted with the Three-Eyed Raven.
Okay.
That's big news.
I mean,
that's a big effing deal.
I'm just saying, like, Theon, you're not going to make it, honey. You're just not. Where's the dire wolf? Maybe put a dire wolf with Bran, too. Where's Ghost? Give him Ghost.
Ghost is there. Ghost is around, finally.
Yeah, but they should have been like, and we'll put Ghost in there with Theon, too. I don't know. I just don't feel very safe with Brandon's plan. I'm just putting it down. I don't like it. It's not
going to
work.
But the funny thing is that I think it's probably their best chance. Because how else are they going to draw out the Night King?
I know.
And who's also to say that if the Night King gets killed, that everybody else will get killed? I know we have the proof that when Jon killed one of the White Walkers, you know, back in season 7, mm-hmm. they all died around him. Like,
yes.
All the Whites that the White Walker created. I get it. But that doesn't mean that logic will apply to the Night King.
I don't know.
I mean, it's more than likely it would, but you don't know, right?
What if they get their hands on baby Sammy and touch his head?
Oh.
And then he turns blue eyes and he's a new white baby. I don't even know. There's just so much to unravel. Are there any other major points that we need to bring up?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know we're getting long.
Yeah, we are long. But I the whole importance, I think, of... I keep going back to Tyrion for this because I feel like the spine is created with Tyrion and Jaime. But I think the real importance with Tyrion, and all I kept thinking of as I was watching it, is like the 7 steps of grief. As, you know, the beginning of the episode, he's like, well, we're here and we're going to die.
This,
you know?
He did a very bad job of the secret of bringing about positive affirmations.
And that's why I'm saying it's the 7 steps of grief, because throughout the episode, he goes and he talks to other people and you can see it. Like, for example, the first step of the 7 steps of grief is
you
the
just
shock.
Got so deep.
I did. Is
Bring
the,
it.
Is shock and disbelief.
Okay.
Like, he can't believe he's in Winterfell. He can't believe it. And he and Jaime are going to die. Like, this is unreal.
Right.
I can't believe this just happened. The denial part is the next step. He's like, so we're going to die in Winterfell. It's probably not what I would have chosen. I always pictured, and he has this story of, I always pictured myself dying in bed with a belly full of wine and a woman's S in my D. It's just that denial part. The next part is anger and bargaining, where he is bargaining with Dany to be in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be there. Let's make this happen. bargaining, and it's bargaining for loss and trying to find ways to turn the situation around. And it makes you feel like you have power in a situation that you don't have power in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Then there's the guilt. Guilt of having regrets about things that are unsaid or unseen, wishing that someone could do something different or have something different. And then having this moment, and this is kind of a stretch, but having this moment with Jamie when he's saying, I wish Dad were around to see what his sons would have been doing right now. I can't help but there's a tad of guilt there. He was the one who killed his dad, and here he is wishing that his dad was there.
That was really weird. Once again, awkward should have been the name for this episode.
And then there's the depression, the loneliness, and the reflection of it all. The next step, choosing to be at the fireside with his brother alone, contemplating his mm-hmm. life, seeing all the things that he's done. It's a time for reflection and going back, thinking of things that we've done and, oh my God, I was a whoremonger and you were the golden lion and this is amazing. And it's your first sign of acceptance. Mm-hmm. The next step is reconstruction and working through the whole thing. Being with that entire group at the fireside, telling the stories, reliving the moments of all the famous battles. And even Jamie saying, yes, and I was the infamous failure at the Whispering Wood. Like, acknowledging that past of losing to Robb Stark and getting caught. Like, it's a special thing. And even requesting a song or knighting a woman who can't or shouldn't or should not have or wouldn't have been knighted otherwise. And then finally, the acceptance. But with acceptance becomes a little hope. He says at the end of the conversation, you know what? I think we're going to live through this. I think we're going to be okay. Mm. This whole deal, we're going to be all right. It's a feeling of hope that, yes, the world may be different. Life may never, ever be the same. But there's something peaceful and happy about things never being the same. It might just live. And the world may be different, but I'm okay with that. Isn't that remarkable?
It is beautiful. Well done.
You know, I feel like that is something that we all kind of are going to go through with this upcoming episode.
Okay. With the great loss that we're about to have.
Yeah. And Tyrion just went through all the seven steps for us right away. Mm-hmm. I also read a great article, and this is kind of off topic, but I read a great article about people with television shows when they watch shows for a long time and they get to know characters and they get to know the story. And when one of those characters die or the show ends, there's a real sense of grief in
there
people.
There is, yes.
Like, you lost your friend. And it's nonsense. It's absurd. It's just as absurd as Tormund Giantsbane talking about suckling off of the teat of a giant and drinking a horn full of milk, turning it up a notch. But it's the truth. I remember when The Leftovers ended, I was in shambles for a week. When Lost ended, I cried for 3 days straight. I can kind of see where that's coming from. Do you feel the same way about that?
I agree. Taking a deep breath. I'm just taking a deep. We can all take a collective deep breath. And I feel like all of us are going to be pins and needles. You know, if you're preparing for the battle next week and you need some merriment, go back. Watch this episode a few more times. Watch some of your favorite Game of Thrones episodes.
Right.
Watch your favorite characters that are still here that may not be here. And enjoy those moments. And join in the seven phases of grief with Tyrion Lannister.
We also have confirmation that the pregnancy, at least according to Jaime, with Cersei is real. He says that the pregnancy was real, although she uses the truth to tell lies all the time. And we also had a really important Bran moment, where he kind of acknowledges the limits of his powers. Mm-hmm. He may not be able to see everything, either future, present, or past, unless he focuses on it, right?
Yes.
And he says to everybody, somebody says, will Dragonfire stop him, like, in terms of the Night King? Mm-hmm. And Bran acknowledges, he's like, I don't know. It's never been tried before. I couldn't tell you. So he's not all-knowing.
Correct. He's still growing. I mean, he became the Three-Eyed Raven a little too early.
Yes.
So he's had to learn on the fly and has made some, you know, progress, but still doesn't know everything. Oh.
And lastly, the thing I want to...
Poor Bran.
The last thing I want to talk about to is a very subtle thing that I think is often overlooked.
Okay.
It's the art of the reaction shot. Mm-hmm. When there, obviously we have the beautiful moment of Brienne getting knighted and I was sobbing and Jamie's the one who's doing it for her and saying all the things and she's looking at him and crying and this is the man that she loves on a very subconscious level. And I'm sure that he kind of really, like, really loves her on a subconscious level. They can't say it. They do what they can to, like, bring each other out. Mm-hmm. It's just this, like, I watched it again, like, right before we started, and I was crying in front of my computer. Like, I, like, oh my, give me all the concealer so I don't show up on Facebook Live, like, looking like an idiot. But before all of that, there was this moment when Jamie says, you don't need a knight. I'll do it. I'll do it right here. Mm-hmm. Come over here. And Brienne's looking around and she's like, oh my God, do I really want this? I just said I didn't want to be a knight. And she looks at Podrick.
Oh, Podrick.
And Podrick with his giant dong.
No, and his beautiful voice. That's how he wooed those women.
I know, that's
true. That's how he wooed that brothel. He probably sang them Jenny's song and they were like, we will do whatever you want.
There's this moment in this reaction shot of Podrick giving her the confidence and almost permission to be like, you know you want this.
Yes.
Go do it. And that is what I'm saying about the reaction shot. Mm-hmm. Because whenever you have something big that has happened, someone's giving a speech, someone is doing something, and you turn around and you pan to other people looking at this person, whenever you have a reaction shot, there has to be a story there. There has to be something. It has to be an affirmation. It has to be consent. It has to be controversial. It has to be like someone at odds, like someone's angry. Okay. You have to tell a story with the reaction. If you don't further the story with it, there's no point in doing it. Mm-hmm. And that this was an absolute mastery in the reaction shot.
Agreed.
Something that, if you're not paying attention to it, it just kind of goes through your brain doesn't register it, but it does register the emotional math of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it registers the emotional math of, this makes sense.
Because we were nodding along with Podrick.
Right.
I think, you know, when it's a friend, not a foe reaction, that they're also trying to tap into how would we as the audience, as this person, friend, hopefully be reacting as well.
So because of all of this, this is one of my favorite episodes of Game of Thrones. Agreed. I will rewatch this one.
I knew it was. As soon as this is happening and your tears are flowing, I was like, oh, this is it.
Right.
This is going to be in Blake's top 10 easily. Well, probably top 5.
Not only that, not only the knighting scene, which again, breathtaking, cried, yes, sobbed, all the Charmin. I cried more in this episode than I did all of season 3 of This Is Us. Okay? Absolutely. Abso-friggin-lutely. But each character had a moment. Each character had something funny to say. Each character had this realization of, this is our life. This is what we're doing. Holy F. Like, this is what's going to happen.
Agreed.
I really liked that. And I will rewatch this episode time and time again. You know what I think we should do real quick?
Yes.
As I think we should, right before the battle, We should talk about Valyrian steel.
Oh my gosh, because it's like my favorite thing to talk about.
Yes, absolutely.
Blake was trying to fall asleep last night and I was like, hold up. Can we please dissect where all of the current Valyrian steel is? Now, granted, there's an abundance of dragon glass. Abundance.
Yes.
And
dragon glass everywhere. On the embattlements, on the walls.
But they figured out how to make Valyrian steel. Supposedly.
Well, no, they don't know. Apparently, the art of making Valyrian steel, which is imbued with dragon fire and magic and all of those things, that's why it's so special and comes from Essos, which is Valyria. That is why those swords are few and far between and why they're so special.
And
because of the magic that's contained within it.
And originally, all of this, what we're finding is that a lot of it was up north. So, of course, Ned Stark's sword, which was Valyrian steel, after he was beheaded, Tywin Lannister took that sword, melted it down, made it into two swords, gave one to Jaime, which he then gave to Brienne, which is Oathkeeper. So Brienne has one. The other one was then given to Joffrey, Widow's Wail. And then Joffrey cut open his cake, killed all the pigeons. That's pretty much the only blood that was shed
and
with
then
Widow's
Wail.
Yeah, and then he died. And Jaime now has Widow's Wail. So right. Jaime and Brienne both have Valyrian steel.
Yep.
Jorah Mormont now has Valyrian steel because Sam gave it to him.
That was Heartsbane. That was his. That was
Samwell's
father's family sword. It was just in this recent episode given to Ser Jorah.
And he says now those three have it.
Yes.
Arya has her little Valyrian steel dagger.
Yes.
John, does that have even a name or is it just swords?
It's Longclaw. John's.
Her little dagger.
What is the dagger's name?
It might not have a name.
Oh, I feel like it does have a name.
But then John has...
Oh, it's the cat's paw dagger.
Yes.
That's okay. What it is, cat's paw.
And then Jon Snow has Longclaw.
Yes.
Is that all of the Valyrian steel that we know about?
That is all of the Valyrian steel we know about. Longclaw was Valyrian steel that was part of House Mormont that was given to him by the Lord Commander.
So how sweet that it was supposed to kind of go to Jorah, but he never got that. But now Jorah does have... Valyrian steel in the end.
Right.
It's
so
great.
That is all of the Valyrian steel. And it's all held by the main players, I think, of the battle that's coming.
I really wish Grey Worm had some Valyrian steel. Not going to lie. That man's good.
He is excellent.
That's going to be the issue. Someone should have given him. Arya should hand on over, now that she has her special thing, if she's not going to be using cat's paw or whatever it is, she should have given it to Grey Worm. All right, so we know where the Valyrian steel is. We need to discuss something that might be Three-Eyed Raven time.
Well, no, we have to do our throne power rankings.
Oh, okay, yes. I always mess this up.
That's okay. That's why you got me. Okay. I'm here. I'm going to take care of you. So are you ready for the three-eyed... are you ready for the throne power rankings?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
You can start things off.
Okay. So... we're going to go 5-1, and I'm going to give you...
Five being...
Yeah, five, like the lowest one
to the
most powerful one, like the one that will end up. All right, so my number 5 choice, down 3 spots from last week.
Oh, you are keeping track of spots.
I kept track. Down 3 spots from the first week, Cersei. There's just something about her that she's just too smart to let all this go to waste. I just don't feel it. Number 4, up from not even being ranked last week, Jon Snow. Jon Snow to me is also one of those guys that I just feel like is going to make it out, and people are going to have the choice to put him on the throne, and I think people will do it. I absolutely think people will do it. Number 3 for me, down 2 spots from last week, Sansa. Sansa has a better chance at being at the throne, but I put her down.
She doesn't want to be there.
Because she doesn't want to be there.
But no.
If Jon dies and Dany dies, Sansa's the next logical choice.
Agreed.
Number 2. Up 3 spots from last week, the Night King. I keep saying it. I've got this vision of the Night King sitting down on the throne. He may not be there forever, but there's this moment of him sitting on the throne and just looking out. I just think that would be such a cool moment.
That'd be amazing.
And just like having, I don't know if it would be like a grin, but just like some kind of acknowledgement, like F all of you,
okay.
I'm here. I would just love that. And my number 1 spot up from not even being ranked, no one. There's gonna be no Iron Throne. None, 0.
Okay.
I think that is the most likely choice. How about you? What do you got?
All right. 5th, Dany. I mean, she's got a lot of reasons. We've been cheering for her for 7 seasons, so she might as well be there. The Night's King, I agree. I think he'll like have it, and then he'll like turn it into ice and blow it away. Gendry?
So emo.
Gendry?
Oh, yes. That's a good one.
Now that he like outed it to Arya, where he was like, oh, kind of, you know, Baratheon's son. If Dany and Jon, I don't know, die or don't want it, I mean, he's a Baratheon. He's a pretty nice guy.
You want a developing take?
Yeah.
This one's totally... The nerds down the hall and I have been working on this. Severe developing take.
Okay.
Arya and Gendry's kid.
Love. That's going to take a little while.
It's going to take a while. But there's no reason why there can't be a time jump.
I mean, okay. Oh, like in Narnia.
Yes.
Okay. Jon Snow.
Yes. Logical choice.
And then I agree with you. No one.
So that is...
I think the red keeps going bye-bye.
I think so too.
Bye-bye.
I think so too.
And I think it's happening real soon.
Oh, that's a hot take.
Yes, it is. Okay, let's go.
Let's get some Three-Eyed Raven time. All right. You have a Three-Eyed Raven time?
You can go first.
All right, so I got a couple.
Good, because I didn't have any last time, so I'm really proud of
myself. I know, you got to make up for it this time. I keep wondering, does Dany make a mistake while defending Bran against the Night King?
I mean, she's not a fighter.
No, she's not, but she has complete control of her dragons.
Okay.
But I just wonder if there's a mistake while fighting against the Night King that actually kills Bran instead of the Night King. Or worse yet, does she do something rash while with Jon with the intent of killing the Night King, but knowingly sacrifices Bran at the same time? Like, she doesn't give one F about Bran.
I mean, she doesn't.
And she, her main goal, as we discussed in this whole podcast, has been the throne, the throne, the throne, the throne. And the clearest, easiest way to the throne is killing the Night King. And if I have to sacrifice Bran in order to make that happen...
If she kills Brandon Stark, she is off the Stark's list.
Which furthers the narrative of her not being likable, right? The other thing here, too, is Melisandre.
Oh.
Where is Melisandre in all of this? Because she does have that prophecy. She traveled to Essos.
She's coming back.
She is absolutely going to come back because she is destined to come back. She says, I'm not going to die in Essos. I'm going to die here in this foreign land in Westeros. And who is she talking to? Who did she say this to when she said, you're going to die with me? Is Varys. What role do these two play? Especially when you start talking about all of the religion and the gods that have been part of this episode. We have the old gods with, you know, the gods wood and everything. We have the new gods that Jaime is knighting Ser Brienne with. We even have the Lord of Light when the Hound is talking with Arya and he's making fun of Beric and Darian, saying the Lord of Light's going to wonder why he got you back 12 times and when I fire you off the freaking top of the wall.
Yes.
You have all of these people. And Melisandre is devoted to the Lord of Light. What role does the Lord of Light, who is the opposite of complete darkness in terms of the Night King, what role does she play in all this? Which makes me wonder and still confirm why they're going to lose the Battle of Winterfell.
Oh, yeah.
They're absolutely going to lose it.
They have to lose it.
But
do you think she'll be back in time for the battle?
No, she won't be back in time for the battle, but she will be back.
Okay.
And I wonder if she'll be back in time for the Battle of King's Landing.
Okay.
That's my guess. Or something where the Night King is at the edge of King's Landing.
Okay.
And I also wonder if the Vale will play a part in all of this. Because the Vale is...
I think so.
I think so, too.
Oh, my God, that's part of my thing.
Because you can't take the Vale. It's on an island, essentially.
Are you ready for this?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
First off, I saw a great theory. I forget where. Someone had put it in. I just have to give a shout out if this was you. Amazing job. Someone said they think that the scarred little girl is Melisandre.
Oh,
in disguise.
Goodness gracious.
Because, of course, she knew that Ser Davos had that relationship. They had that big moment. I mean, they wouldn't have had this relationship with Ser Davos and just a nobody girl that's not going to appear once again. And that girl's going to go down the crypts with Varys.
That is excellent.
I wish I could take credit for it. I don't even know who it was, but good job. All right, are you ready for mine?
Yes.
Okay, it's a multiple step thing. And if I get this right, it's like I won the Kentucky Derby.
Hold on, let me...
It's a three-step process.
Land the plane, Helen.
Stop, okay. It's weird when you play a voice recording of me while I'm talking.
I know.
Okay, so first and foremost, the Battle of Winterfell is not going to go over so well, guys. They're going to lose. But not because of a lack of effort, but it's just going to happen because there's so many whites. And they can't kill the whites because they can't kill the Night King. They can't kill the Night King because the Night King ain't going to be there because we didn't see him. Night King always shows up. We didn't hear a dragon. We just saw all those White Walkers
Ooh,
on their horses.
Okay, yep.
Night King said, screw this noise. I'm going to trap these guys. I'm going and blowing up the South. And with all of those Golden Compass ships, that's more people than
Golden
the North.
Company, not Golden Compass. This isn't that bad movie.
That bad movie with Nicole Kidman. Why was she in so many bad movies? I'm going to turn all of those ship guys into whites, and then I'm going to come at from North and South, and then the people from Winterfell are going to run to the Vale. And that is where they will be.
Oh, I like it.
I think the Night King is going to let all of his people and his horsemen break up things in Winterfell. Their plan's going to go wrong because Bran's going to be there for bait for nobody. The Night King's going down. He's going to attack Cersei. And Cersei does have the dragon killing tool, and she has the wildfire. So I don't really know where I'm going with this, but I do know that all those people on those ships, they made a point to say there's more people on those ships than there are in the north.
Yep.
And so I thought if he could have like some tactical thing that would then force them into the Vale where they do have a place to protect themselves.
Right. And I also said something on Mary and Blake Facebook, by the way. Go to Mary and Blake Facebook to interact with us at any time of the day. I said on the Mary and Blake Facebook page, and this is also in take development here. I'm not gonna die on this hill. Just it's in development. If Cersei does something to redeem herself, and I wonder if her store of
wildfire
mm-hmm. plays a part in this. I don't know. She may be irredeemable as
a
character.
And she has the dragon killing tool. She has that, and she has all that wildfire. I mean, they either need to get down to King's Landing so they can use those resources, or Cersei's going to use them.
Yeah, I think it all plays a part.
But the Whites are going to outrun them. I don't think they're going to make it to King's Landing. I think they are going to make it to the Vale, and that's about it. That's a long journey.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Whites are faster, and they don't need to sleep.
That's true. They don't feel, as we know from John's monologue.
If the Whites and everyone in Winterfell, the North, there's no way the Northerners are going to be able to travel too far before they're all killed.
Right. Oh, another thing that keeps bothering me, this is a little bit off topic, but Bran saying to Jaime, how do you know there will be an afterwards? I think that can be interpreted in many ways. Like either they lose and there's no afterwards mm-hmm. because humanity is just written off. And they're the last best hope, maybe. Or is there just not an afterwards for Bran? Or is there just not an afterwards for Jaime? You understand what I'm saying?
No, you got me so lost. You're like talking like
Jaime will die, but everything else will continue. Or Bran will die and everything else will continue. So it doesn't matter if Bran doesn't say anything to everybody else, because there may not be an afterwards for one of the characters or for all of humanity. It just doesn't matter. They don't have time. Jaime is useful, which is why Bran didn't say anything to anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like that is where things are heading.
Okay.
And that's why I'm convinced Bran dies. I'm convinced, absolutely convinced.
R.I.P. And now Tyrion at least knows the history.
Who will
become the new Raven, Sam?
That would be fitting.
No, because he loves Gilly too much.
Yeah. And that's why I wonder. That's why Sam has to live, because if there's going to be no three-eyed Raven, which I think is fine, you have to have somebody to catalog everything, and that's what Sam is good for. That's his purpose.
Let's wrap this up.
All right, you ready? I got my something special for you.
Oh my gosh, I know what it is.
Yes, you do,
Jenny.
I am the halls of the kings who are gone. Jenny would dance with her ghost.
So good, guys. So good.
This is by Florence, this version. Lost and
she had found the ones who had loved her the most.
Oh, my God. So this version is by Florence and the Machine. And I love Florence and the Machine. All about this band. They're fantastic.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The North Remembers. Obviously, we have so much that we could possibly talk about, so we would love your listener feedback. We didn't get to have a listener feedback episode last week because of Easter, but we're going to be making up for it and having it.
Yeah, so everybody that left voicemails for us last episode, we're going to play them in the upcoming listener feedback, because there's been a lot of response.
Yes, and we want you to keep having it now for this week, but just know that we're going to be doing it. It's just that Passover and Easter happened, so we weren't able to do our recap episode with the listener feedback, but we will be, and we'll be doing it again for this week. So thank you once again for tuning in to The North Remembers. My name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
And I already just said it, but I'll say it again. And The North Remembers.
Through the snow that swept through the hole, from winter to summer.